Welcome to Food for Thought. My name is Colleen Patrick-Goudreau from Compassionate Cooks. I founded Compassionate Cooks to empower people to make informed food choices and to debunk myths about vegetarianism and animal rights. You can learn more about who we are and what we do by visiting our website, www.compassionatecooks.com. There are a number of announcements I'd like to make, and though I loathe dating these podcasts in any way, you are the obvious audience for me to share these things with, so here goes. First, I have a number of speaking engagements lined up around the country, and I don't think I've ever mentioned that to you, so you can visit CompassionateCooks.com and click on Special Classes / Events under Cooking Classes. There are cooking classes and lectures, but that's where you can find the information. I won't tell you what these events are because then I'll really date it. I don't like to give a date on the individual podcast episodes because I want these to be episodes people can listen to at any time and not feel like they're old. Anyway, I think I also mentioned that I'm writing for a wonderful website called Green Options, www.greenoptions.com. And I just wanted to encourage you to check out my blog posts there. You may have heard some of the things that I talk about in the blog on this podcast, but it's actually good because it's in written form. So you can forward the information you learn on this podcast to others, but it actually helps me a lot if you at least visit my articles, at least click on my articles. But there are some fantastic writers on this website and lots of amazing information about living a green, eco-friendly life. So do check out the website in general. Also, I noticed a few people added reviews about Compassionate Cooks on that very popular website called Yelp.com, www.yelp.com. And I wanted to invite you to do the same. You can add a review about our DVD. You can add a review about our cooking classes, about this podcast, or whatever. And when people read your hopefully positive reviews, other people will be more inclined to check out our work. So do visit Yelp.com. I think you have to register for an account, and then you can search for Compassionate Cooks. I think you'll find it if you just do that, and then you can add a review. Finally, I wanted to ask if you would nominate Compassionate Cooks for the third annual podcast awards. First, Compassionate Cooks need to receive nominations, and then you need to vote for Compassionate Cooks. So if you feel so inclined, I thought you might want to visit www.podcastawards.com and nominate Compassionate Cooks for two categories. Two categories is the maximum number of categories a single podcast can be nominated under. So you can choose People's Choice and then another. The two obvious ones are food and drink, and then there's also health and fitness. So take your pick. So that's all for announcements. Thank you, everybody. I really appreciate your helping to spread the word about Compassionate Cooks. Also, thank you for your emails and for your sponsorship. If you would like to be a proud sponsor of this podcast, you can do so by visiting CompassionateCooks.com and clicking on Support Our Podcast. Today's sponsor is Susan Rattenberry, whose email a few months ago was just so lovely. Here's what she wrote. She wrote, "Like so many others, I very much enjoy your inspiring podcast. I went veg in 1988, was active in humane education for a few years, burned out, but stayed vegan. Some time ago, I heard a smart piece you did on KQED's Perspective series. It rekindled a desire to do more, and one thing led to another until this past December when I tried leafleting for the first time. Since then, I have distributed over 7,000 pieces of literature, mostly vegan outreaches, even if you like meat pamphlet, and mostly on college campuses. It is by far the most fulfilling work I've ever done. I use your podcast to rev up and also to refine my responses to questions about veganism. I can't express how helpful you are or how happy I am you exist." Thank you, Susan. I'm extremely happy you exist too. That's extremely vital work that you're doing. I love it. And this is what I mean when I say we have no idea how the seeds we plant will grow. I just love that aspect of this work. I didn't know that, you know, in writing and recording that editorial for KQED, that it would reignite someone to such a degree. That makes all of my work worth it just to know one person became active and reinvigorated. So thank you, Susan, so much. I've said this before, I really never cease being amazed and touched by your stories, and I'm just grateful you send them to me. I really sense your enthusiasm and joy about your own awakenings, about your transition to becoming vegan, but I also hear your sorrow and your weariness. In today's episode, I'd like to address how to cope with the pain of the awareness of animal suffering and also how to be an effective advocate for animals, because I think these things go hand in hand. Before we begin, I want to encourage you to revisit the episode called Taking It All In, because I do think I address some of this in that episode. Tell me if I'm wrong, because I really want to make sure I'm speaking to your concerns. But that episode, in a way, can be considered a precursor to this one because it lays some groundwork for taking in all of this madness and taking care of ourselves at the same time. At least that's my hope. I've been meaning to expand upon that episode for some time, but after receiving a few certain emails, I was inspired to put this topic at the top of my queue. One email was from Misty, who wrote, "I am a new vegan and have literally been attacked in all sorts of verbal arguments, everything from no wonder you look sick, which I don't, to why don't you care about babies? You have given me so much ammo so that I don't have to resort to arguments, but I have a question. It's overwhelming, all of the information I have learned about animal suffering and the humans that suffer along that are involved in the killing and processing of animals. How do you deal with that awareness? I lived in misinformation for so long, or maybe it was denial, and now that I know, I have a very hard time dealing with it. I feel anxious or depressed and try to stretch myself to do every little thing I could possibly do to reduce my impact or tell someone about it." Another email was from Beatrice, who has written to me a couple of times. Hi, Beatrice. She said, "Today I listened in incredible pain to your podcast on fishing bycatch. As an avid scuba diver who has spent many hours underwater sharing the wonderful ocean with beautiful marine species, I cannot tell you how excruciatingly depressing it was for me to hear you quote the agonizing facts and figures on overfishing, bycatch killings, and atrocious effects that the fishing industry is having on the wonderful lives below the surface. Nothing on your podcast was new to me. I've done a lot of research and reading on the catastrophic effect that the fishing industry is having on our oceans' lives. What really pained me was to realize what little difference I, as an individual, and a few thousands like me can make to this dismal situation. I truly feel that what I do, what you do, what many like us try to do, has hardly any true effect on the atrocious actions that the fishing industry and governments carry through every day. I feel like we are as a small flea trying to shift an elephant. How do you do it, Colleen? Where do you get the energy to continue fighting on every day? Don't you get depressed and feel like giving up because you feel like your efforts are hardly making a difference? I certainly feel like that. I will, of course, continue with my efforts every single day, but I have resigned myself to think that whatever I choose to do, the world around me will continue to charge ahead with its destruction." So these two emails compelled me to address this issue. I'm sure you can see why. It really pains me to hear that kind of despair and frustration. Now, as usual, I don't have all the answers. All I can do is share with you what I do and have done to cope in this crazy mixed up world that seems bent on destroying the lives and homes of everyone who isn't human and some who are. So first things first, how do I cope? How do I deal with this? What do? The first thing I do is cry. I cry, you know, I let myself feel this stuff. I absolutely let myself feel this stuff. It probably helps that I don't smoke or drink, so I feel this stuff pretty acutely. There's no numbing or avoiding this pain. A really lovely woman named Victoria, a new vegan who recently wrote to me, phrased this really beautifully. And in fact, you can read Victoria's story at the Joyful Vegan blog. She wrote, "Right now, sorrow for the creatures who endure unthinkable suffering is large for me, but I am grateful for the sorrow, which is real and is part of awakening further to life." Now, I don't know if this makes sense, but there's something comforting about being able to feel that grief. Like, like Victoria said, being able to feel that sorrow, being able to feel that pain, because I would choose that over oblivion any day. And I too lived in denial at one time and was not aware. And I would choose this awareness that happens to come with pain as well over that oblivion any day. Ironically, my favorite books and music and films tend to be somewhat, okay, very melancholy. It's just what I'm drawn to. I really like stories about people who struggle for justice. And when you read those stories or watch those stories, it means you're going to see a lot of injustice in the telling. So they tend to be sad. They tend to be pretty painful, but they also motivate me, these stories. Now, that doesn't mean I watch sad movies just so I can feel sorrow or just, you know, so I can be motivated. Lord knows I don't need any more reasons than those I already have. But I guess I just feel okay. I feel comfortable enough feeling that sadness. And so I embrace it. And I think I said that in the Taking It All In episode. This also doesn't mean I watch sad movies all the time, even though some friends I think would argue with me. And it certainly doesn't mean that I watch the videos of animal torture all the time. Please don't get me wrong. That's not what I'm saying at all. As I said, I'm not telling you what to do. I'm just telling you what I do. And I know you're smart enough to filter through this and take from it what works for you and leave behind the rest. I absolutely listen to myself when it comes to deciding what I can take on any given day. There are some videos, these are videos I'm talking about, animal abuse, you know, undercover videos in slaughterhouses and fur farms, etc. And there are some of these videos that I wait to watch because I might be too vulnerable or sensitive on some days. And there are some that I haven't brought myself to watch yet. I have a very visual mind and I have to be careful. For instance, I haven't watched Earthlings, that wonderful movie. It's a documentary on animal exploitation narrated by Joaquin Phoenix, and I hear it's very painful, and I also hear it's very effective. I know I will watch it someday. I own it, but I just have to make sure I'm in a good place before I do that. Now, do I think I'm less of an activist for not having watched some of these videos? No, I'm no less effective for not having watched these particular videos. I did just order a new DVD of a film made in 1981 called The Animals Film. It was narrated by Julie Christie and received rave reviews, not just by activists, but by film critics as well. It was made in the UK, which is where essentially the Western animal rights movement started. So it's no surprise it received the critical attention it did. And I do plan on watching this film. It probably helped that I watched the trailer on the website to prepare me. And you can visit the website. It's www.theanimalsfilm.com. And you can watch the trailer on their website and you can buy it directly from the website. Now, I watched the trailer and it was very painful and I cried. But then I got to work, you know? So to answer Beatrice, I don't know how I do it. I just know that I can't but act when I see this stuff or hear about this stuff. When I hear about the horror, it doesn't make me want to crawl up under the covers. It makes me want to shout from the rooftops. That's why I do this podcast. That's why I do this work, because I want to spread the word. I want everybody else to know. And what my experience has been is that when people know, they make a change. I think I may have mentioned that I used to do a lot of street TV, where I would bring a TV to the streets of Berkeley, play PETA's video, Meet Your Meat, and hand out Why Vegan pamphlets. And I've seen that video, for instance, a million times. And though you can never get used to something like that, I do have to say that it gets easier. Remember, we're pretty amazing creatures when it comes to denial and compartmentalizing our feelings and cutting off our emotions. So for the purposes of that type of activism, it's a survival mechanism, a defense mechanism for me to turn it off a bit so I can be effective. It's like when I record some really painful things so that I can share them with you on this podcast. I have to distance myself a bit. Otherwise, I wouldn't be able to do this work. Then, when I need to, I have a good cry. And in fact, if you want to know a secret, I usually cry once or twice when I'm working on this podcast. And then I finish and I get to work. So I just, you know, kind of go with whatever I'm feeling. But everybody's different. You know, a really good friend of mine, one of my closest friends, did street TV with me a few times. And on one of the nights we were going to do one, she called to say that she didn't think she would be able to do it. But then she decided to do it and she wanted to tell me what this process was like for her, why she ultimately decided to do it. And she explained that she thought the images on Meet Your Meat produced trauma in people, in passersby, in children, in anyone who saw those images. And she didn't know if she felt comfortable being part of creating trauma, you know, traumatizing people. But then she had a revelation that those very same images that were very traumatic for her, it was that very trauma that opened up so much for her and led her to become vegan in order to reduce animal suffering. And I thought that was just a really wise perspective. Of course, this stuff is traumatic, and it's what many of us need to knock ourselves into consciousness and become part of the solution. And I dug a little deeper, by the way. Part of the word trauma stems from the Indo-European word meaning to turn. And I thought that was interesting. Like, in a sense, the trauma of the truth literally turns us, changes us for the better, in my opinion. Now, I do think it's necessary to consider the energy levels with which we come into this world. I mean, I do think there are things we can do to raise our existing energy levels, but some of us just have higher or lower energy levels than others. Some of us are more sensitive, you know, to this information than others. I've always had a very high energy level, so I have to push myself really hard to get drained. And that's just the way I, you know, kind of came into this world. I've always been very action-oriented, and I've always been a problem solver, and I actually thrive on being active, on being part of the solution. So it kind of keeps me really energized. So when I watch these videos or read about the atrocities, I really do have a good cry, I've said before, but then I feel even more motivated to make a change. And in fact, that's probably one of the dangers for me of watching this stuff, because I wind up working harder, which is not always good, because I struggle with finding balance all the time. So to wrap up this point, I think it's really important to be really clear about what your limitations are and to know where your line is. I hate to think that Beatrice became depressed after my podcast. So maybe if you know an episode that I'm doing, for instance, is about a topic that might cause you pain, maybe it's better to avoid it. You know, I do have a description of each podcast, however you find the podcast, you can see a description. And so if you know it's going to be about, maybe specifically about animals, you might not want to listen. If it's about food and nutrition, maybe that's easier for you. But, you know, just kind of know where your line is. If you feel like reading more or witnessing more cruelty would actually drain your energy, then don't do it. Absolutely don't do it. If you feel like you're okay with it sometimes, but not others, then be honest with yourself about when those times are. Being an advocate for animals doesn't mean that you become a martyr. That's not what this is about. It's about being a voice for animals. A part of that means taking care of yourself. If you're unwell or unhealthy or angry or depressed or in despair or without joy, you're helping neither yourself nor are you helping animals. So don't be a martyr. Was it Socrates who said, "Know thyself"? I think it was Socrates. So listen to Socrates. Know thyself and know thy limitations. Socrates didn't say that. I said that. Know thy limitations. Know your limitations. Know thyself. So whereas I think it's really important to feel the sorrow and embrace it as part of the whole package of being human, of living life, and of being an activist, I think it's also really important to laugh. I do watch a lot of movies, many of them pretty melancholy, probably most of them, but I also watch comedies. I really watch comedies. I've been accused of being a bit of a film snob, and frankly, I don't really mind. There are amazing films out there, and I just don't want to waste my time with the fluff that's churned out. So anyway, I guess I am a bit of a film snob. But having said that, my husband and I rent and own a lot of stuff that makes us laugh. And for us, it's British television shows. I've watched probably every episode of every season of the Blackadder series like a million times each, and it's quite pathetic. I also adore Jeeves and Wooster, which is also a British television series that was based on the P.G. Wodehouse comic novels, which are fantastic. If you want to laugh out loud while you're reading, you absolutely have to read P.G. Wodehouse. That's Wodehouse, P.G. Wodehouse. We also watch Keeping Up Appearances, which is hilarious, absolutely fabulous, French and Saunders, Fawlty Towers, that sort of thing. Although Fawlty Towers actually stresses me out a bit because John Cleese is insane in it and he's kind of mean. So that's funny sometimes, but it also stresses me out. Anyway, the bottom line is I know when I'm in the mood for something light or heavy and I listen to myself. I also think spending time with people who make you laugh is really important, especially when we need a charge. We don't want to spend time with people who drain our energy. We want to be with people who replenish us. And this is just another reason for having like-minded people in your life. Scheduling downtime, playing games, hiking, going to museums, whatever, just spending some time away from everything that makes you sad. Now, please understand, all of this is coming from someone who really struggles with this balance thing. This stuff is on my mind 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And because I work from home and I struggle with my own guilt when I'm not doing something, I'm speaking from experience when I say it's important to do all of these things. It took me a long time to admit that I'm a bit of a workaholic. And sometimes it takes physical pain for me to stop working. I've recently come down with some serious wrist pain, which has led me to change the way I do some things. And it's a little scary to know that I drove myself to physical injury. My more even-minded friends and husband remind me that it's not optimum to wait until I'm in pain to stop working. So I'm learning to do all this stuff too. Burnout is all too common in animal activists and activists in general. And that's not a place you want to get to. The problem for me, that's not a problem, but I mean, the problem is that I really feel best. I feel best emotionally when I'm doing something, when I'm doing something to end the suffering of animals, when I'm doing something to raise awareness of their suffering and, you know, doing something to empower people to live according to their own truth and compassion. But I have to be super honest with you. Some of my workaholism does stem from the pangs of guilt that I have when I feel like I'm not doing these things. I thought, you know, who am I to relax and enjoy life when there's so much suffering out there? And though that might sound noble, I really do believe now that A, it sounds too much like martyrdom, and B, I will be no good to the animals or to other people if I don't take care of myself. I mean, I really believe that now, but it took me a long time to get there. So I do strive for balance, and I know that the healthier I am physically and emotionally, the better representative I am for animals. So having established the fact that I encourage finding balance in our lives as advocates, I want to talk briefly about the main thing that keeps me going day in and day out. I'm an activist. I absolutely don't have time, and the animals don't have time for me to get mired down in despair. They need me to act for them, to speak for them, to be their ambassador, and that's what gets me up every morning. But that's not the whole truth. The fact is, I would not be able to keep going if I didn't have hope. I mean, I literally spring out of bed every morning, excited to start my day, annoyed at having to sleep at all because it's a waste of time, so I can speak on behalf of animals and spread the word that needs to be spread. Acting on behalf, doing something, being part of the solution, that's what pushes me every day. When people ask me what they can do to help, what type of activism they can get involved in, there are so many options. But let me just say that because being vegan is such a powerful means for preventing suffering, I think it's so exciting that just by making different food choices or different choices for our clothing or shoes or for our entertainment or the cleaning and personal products we buy, we can have such a huge impact. So even if you don't have time to be an activist in the formal sense, you are making a difference, Beatrice, by choosing this compassionate lifestyle. This stuff is contagious. We're not talking about thousands of people. We're talking about millions of people. So we are making a difference. And if you want very specific things about what you can do, I highly, highly encourage you to visit the website www.strikingattheroots.com. It's the website of a new fabulous book coming out in January 2008, and it's written by activist extraordinaire Mark Hawthorne, an amazing friend to the animals and a very good friend of mine. His book is called Striking at the Roots, A Practical Guide to Animal Activism. And it's the most comprehensive book ever written on the many ways you can act on behalf of animals, not just animals killed for human consumption, but animals exploited in every way in our society. In the meantime, I'll tell you what I think is the best form of activism for you. Whatever it is you're good at and whatever it is you love. I happen to think this is the key to not just activism, but the answer to what am I supposed to do in this world? I don't believe that we're supposed to have the separation between the work we're supposed to do in the world and the way we're supposed to make a living. I believe the work we're supposed to do in this world should be an extension of our passion and our gifts. I know it's such a cliche, but you know, like, do what you love and the money will follow. But unfortunately, many of us get fed a bunch of lies that make us afraid to live our truth and manifest our gifts. In terms of activism, I do think there are certain types of activism that are more effective than others, but the bottom line is you're going to be the most effective if you're really coming from a truthful and joyful place. Again, I don't think we're supposed to be martyrs. I think we're supposed to be at our highest when we're speaking our truth. And if we're finding that we're using a method that doesn't really reflect our joy or truth, then perhaps we need to find another method that works for us. The work I'm doing now is very similar to the type of activism I did early on. Writing has always been something I loved doing and had a knack for. So my very early activism involved writing, involved making little brochures and flyers about different issues. Early on, they were about puppy mills and vivisection, you know, animals that are used as research tools. And this was before the internet, so I would actually write down the names and telephone numbers of various organizations people could get in touch with to learn more. And I still have these early brochures and flyers. They're pretty cute. And I used to walk around the mall. I'm from New Jersey, so I used to walk around the mall, and there's a lot of malls in New Jersey, and hand out these flyers, especially the ones about puppy mills, because there was a pet store in this particular mall right near me. And I was scared to death doing this. I didn't know any other activists, but I just needed to do this. I needed to inform people and to feel like I was doing something. So it was just really empowering. It's just how I got started. When I left graduate school and my fellow graduates and I talked about what we were going to do, you know, just in terms of, you know, teaching or what we were going to do with our degree, I remember saying, I don't know what it's going to look like. I don't know what it's going to look like, but I know that what I'm going to do has something to do with writing, teaching, and raising awareness about animal rights. And I didn't know what it was going to look like. So I kept trying a number of different things and listening to what I heard was most needed. And that's how I started teaching cooking. It wasn't something I had planned, but it was a gap that I felt needed to be filled. And I did enjoy cooking, so it made sense. Anyway, you get the idea. More important than the answers we have are the questions we ask. I just kept asking, what do I love and what am I good at? And I kept getting direction about what I needed to do, but what the answers were. I worked for many years building Compassionate Cooks while I worked at other organizations. I was essentially working two jobs building Compassionate Cooks. And when the time was right, I left that organization I was working for. And it was very scary. And I was able to do this work full time. I do feel very blessed, but it did not happen overnight. I worked very hard and I still work very hard to make it happen. Now, for those of you who don't do this work full time, please do not think that that's absolutely necessary either. There are so many ways to be effective advocates in the framework of our current lives. Plus, you can have more than one passion. So it's not like only those of us doing this work as our vocation are the most effective ones. In fact, I think in many ways, you're all doing the harder work. Admittedly, I live in a bit of a bubble. You know, my husband is vegan. All of my friends are vegan. Our closest friends are vegan. And I'm immersed in and I'm carried by this hope that I see every day because of people like you. And I'm not making that up. I mean, for those of you who are surrounded by non-vegan coworkers and friends and colleagues and spouses and have to go out to dinner, I know that this work can be very taxing and all of that can be very taxing, which is why I come back to this mantra again and again, seek out the hope. It's absolutely there. I get to hear from people every day who are changing themselves, who are changing their minds, who are changing their habits and changing the world. And this is why I created the Joyful Vegan blog, joyfulvegan.wordpress.com. You can also go to compassionatecooks.com and click on the Joyful Vegan blog under writings. This blog is your blog because it's full of your stories. It's so special to me because I get to share with the world, with your permission, of course, how special you are. So please check out this blog. Please read these stories. It gives me so much hope. I know it will give you so much hope. And do send me your stories of transformation so you can give hope to others. And I'll put them up on the blog. And if that doesn't do it for you, I'd like to end this episode with an excerpt from a wonderful essay by Vegan Outreach co-founder Matt Ball. Susan, the sponsor of today's podcast, wanted me to recommend this essay, and today's topic was a perfect time to do so. Plus, it honors Susan and the work she's been doing leafleting, which is just a wonderful, effective, fulfilling, vital form of activism. So I encourage you to get involved. You can visit veganoutreach.org for ways to volunteer for them and to read Matt's full essay, which is called A Meaningful Life. So here's just an excerpt. And Beatrice, I read this with you in mind. Is the situation hopeless? If you look at the big picture, I do believe that there is reason for optimism. Indeed, anyone interested in creating a fundamental change for the future is advised to take the long view, at least longer than the next year or even the next decade. While it is frustrating how slow the pace of progress can seem to us, the rate of change has been unprecedented in the past few centuries. As Bruce Friedrich of PETA points out, Socrates, considered the father of philosophical thought, was teaching more than 2,500 years ago. It was thousands of years later that we saw the beginnings of our democratic system. Not until the 19th century was slavery abolished in the developed world. Only in the last century was child labor ended, child abuse criminalized, women allowed to vote, and minorities granted wider rights. When viewed in this context, it seems clear that today we have the great and singular opportunity to make The Economist magazine's prediction come true. Economist magazine wrote, "Historically, man has expanded the reach of his ethical calculations as ignorance and want have receded, first beyond family and tribe, later beyond religion, race, and nation. To bring other species more fully into the range of these decisions may seem unthinkable to moderate opinion now. One day, decades or centuries hence, it may seem no more than civilized behavior requires." And Matt continues, "Is this enough to keep an activist going day in and day out when trying to do the hard and often abstract work of promoting veganism, especially while not surrounded by other activists to provide support? We aren't robots. We each want to be happy. Yet our desire for happiness is, I believe, the answer to the final challenge. Ultimately, happiness is not to be found in stuff. While the U.S. is the richest country on earth, Americans aren't the happiest people on earth. The phrase isn't the pursuit of happiness for nothing. As biological creatures, it is our nature to always desire more, to constantly strive for a greater share, regardless of what we already have. Over the millennia, those creatures who were satisfied were erased from the gene pool by our unfulfilled ancestors, leaving us with a nature that pursues happiness but isn't able to acquire it. Where does this leave us? The best answer I found is happiness is the result of a meaningful life, and meaning comes not from things, but from accomplishment. I believe that meaningful accomplishment comes from living life beyond ourselves, viewing our existence beyond the immediate. Doing my thoughtful best to make the world a better place is as meaningful a life as I can imagine." And he paraphrases Martin Luther King Jr. "The arc of history is long and ragged and often unclear, but ultimately it progresses towards justice." Every time we speak up for animals and act on behalf of those who need us most, we are part of that progress. I also believe that the creation of the world we want starts with our thoughts. If we believe that injustice will prevail, let me just say, I don't share those thoughts. And those negative thoughts compete with my hopeful thoughts that justice will prevail. Don't underestimate the power of thought. It shapes our perceptions. It determines our actions, and it creates the world we live in. Now, that's just my opinion. I could be wrong, and if I am, I have nothing to lose by thinking this way. But if I'm right, there will come a time when we look back upon our treatment of non-human animals and say, what were we thinking? This is Colleen with Compassionate Cooks. Thanks for listening.